Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Oh, man. All right. Should we get started?
What? Sure.
What, Jacob?
Kotaku's reporting that Suicide Squad got delayed again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's on my news list.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
God.
Oh.
Well, on the plus side, I don't have anything to report, so the news is going to go pretty quick.
Yeah, I don't have anything either. Woohoo.
I don't have a ton either, so it should be a quicker one. So we'll just get started. Sound good?
Yeah.
For real.
Yep.
How was that, Aki?
I have no idea.
You just say turn me on for real?
What?
That's I don't what know. I heard
That's
too.
What it sounded like.
I don't know like, what I like, said, but it sure as fuck real. Wasn't that.
I was
that
whispering stuff better. Because my cat is being obnoxious.
The mic didn't pick up your whispering.
Okay, good.
Yeah, and also I'm just like, I'm uncomfortable with either of you, like, whispering, you know, turn me on for real.
That would make me sick to my stomach, so you don't have to worry about that. That's definitely not what I said. I don't know what I said, but it wasn't
I
that.
I think I was whispering it
at
about the deeming cat time, and yeah, that you can't
yeah,
do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Joe?
Jacob, turn me on.
I hate that.
Hey, Joe,
what?
Oh God, no!
You know how to. I know how to turn you on. Just gaze into the gaping abyss that is my butthole.
I knew that was coming, and I'm really excited.
Don't worry, Joe's
coming. I have been thinking about that quote for very, very interesting reasons that I'm not going to disclose yet.
Oh, come on. You can't say that.
Ah, so, you, so you got a
club way up to your shoulder? Deal with it.
I think she just has a glove that goes all the way up to her shoulder now.
Does it go snap when you put it on?
Probably.
I like to make people suffer.
See, there you go.
Keeping all of that. What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Jacob and Aki are here as usual, and then Bree is here. Lady Magritte, how are you doing?
Good. How are you all?
Confused?
Yeah.
Pretty good. I had Burger King.
No one cares. I want to hear more about the glove and Jacob.
Do you want to hear what I had for dinner?
Yes.
What did you have for dinner? Okay.
I have been trying to get better at cooking with my cast iron cookware again. So I put some chili and garlic infused olive oil into my pan, and I seared my pork chops with a really nice Greek seasoning, and then I put it in the oven with some yams that have a medieval, it's called powder fort, on it, and a little bit of butter, and then I put some garlic and butter on some asparagus, and it was nami.
Yeah, asparagus is absolute tits. It's pretty great. I love
when
it.
When it's done right, yes. But oh, I yeah. It's not for everyone. So, and I like mine on the crunchier side. I don't want it to get mushy. And I think that that's part of why people don't get into asparagus is they might have it like from a can or overcooked the first couple times they have it. And they're like, nah.
Well, on top of it, mixing it with ham. Hell yeah.
Joe, how do you feel about asparagus?
I'm not a fan.
Okay, there we go.
I like broccoli, though.
I like most veggies.
Broccoli and cauliflower, I'm not a fan of.
I can't do cauliflower. It's like albino sure broccoli.
Are you sure you don't like broccoli, or you just not like broccoli mites?
No, I'm just really not a fan of broccoli. I don't like broccoli, cauliflower, lima beans, and peas. Like
peas are
like,
awesome.
Pretty much anything that is like because I've got texture issues with that kind of stuff. If it's way too damn soft and mushy, forget it. No way.
Yeah, the mushy part is, see, and again, I steam my broccoli So I only lightly steam it, so it's still kind of crispy or crunchy or however you want to call it, but it's still like cooked. I get it like just to that, like, I don't know, al dente for broccoli kind of, you know, texture, and that's how I prefer it. So,
I'm a fan of the way Outback Steakhouse does their broccoli, because their broccoli is kind of soggy, but all of that sog is pure butter.
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, all right,
so you like them American style?
Yeah, very.
Joe went to the Paula Deen school of cooking. Yeah. Just more butter.
Need more butter. More butter, baby. Oh, man.
We only have the hydrate thing on here, because if we told Joe to like
eat a stick butter on the thing,
I was gonna say, we just see you like taking a huge like bite out of a stick of butter.
I did that when I was a little kid. Not even lying. Like, I was in a high chair, apparently, and it was the only thing within reach, and my parents left me just too long, and I got bored, and apparently I just grabbed that stick of butter and shoved it in my mouth and ate, like, half of it before they came back for me.
Nice.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I can't do that. I could eat butter bread. I've had mayonnaise sandwiches, of course. Yeah, just butter on bread.
That's okay.
Yeah.
It's sad, is what it is.
Yeah, sadness food. I've had like mayonnaise pop sandwiches, another sadness food. Ketchup sandwiches, sadness. Another sadness food.
Hey, I had ketchup sandwiches as a kid as well, but that was because I fucking love ketchup.
And the smell of ketchup now.
Honestly, as a kid, I loved ketchup and egg whites on a sandwich.
I used to eat peanut butter out of the tub. That's what Ashley does. She buys it. Yes. She buys it by the cardboard canister, like just the giant carton of Jif peanut butter, and she'll sit on the couch with a spoon, just watch ER and eat peanut butter.
See, I can do the spoonful.
That's how you relax after saving people's lives all night. So,
but Jif, come on, Skippy is the far superior.
Dude, she will fuck you up on peanut butter. She will not take your slander. She will not take your shit.
You know what? I'll even come out and say it. Peter Pan honey peanut butter is even better. So,
can I just say crunchy peanut butter for the win?
No.
Oh my gosh.
It's okay. If somebody's like, you know, I prefer crunchy peanut butter, I can respect it, but I'm not really a fan of it.
I used to have to make my own peanut butter.
That's why that explains it.
Yeah, and I would have to like grab a mortar and pestle and like grind it myself and mix it with honey, and that is the best way to have peanut butter. But like when you're little, you don't want to sit there forever, and so I think that is totally why I'm like obsessed with the crunchy peanut butter to this
day.
You know, the extra texture is really good. And
yeah,
you know,
I like my eating, creamy.
If you're like spreading it on a crisp apple or like a piece of celery, like it has a little extra crunch to it. I don't know.
See, yeah, but both of those things are things that don't need extra crunch, though.
Yeah, they do. It complements each other well. You have like the little bit of soft and a little bit of crunch and a little bit of salt and sweet. And
yeah, but the thing is, your apple shouldn't be like mushy anyway. So
well, depends on how you cook them.
Hold on. What do you mean? What do you mean cooking your apples? Why are you cooking your apples before you put? Like,
apple a la mode, motherfucker.
Wait, but you cook apples, but I was listening to the Tuesday show, but you like eat everything else cold. I'm very confused. Yeah, do you at least like to eat your women hot? I mean,
hold on, let me get Norg's audio clip on this.
I totally missed whatever comment I made.
After dark. It's something that made me turn a little red. That's just know that. That's all you need to know.
How did you miss that, Jacob?
Because I was trying to say something, and the rest of you were all ignoring me. So.
I'm going to apologize right now. I feel like I'm going to interrupt you a lot tonight. And
that's okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, anyway,
none of us really care. It's just I missed out on whatever the funny quip against Aki was. So
I don't know that it was funny. It was just
It made her turn red. So yeah, of course it was funny.
I might have turned red when it came out of my mouth. I'm just saying. More worried that I offended. Anyway.
Oh, God, no.
Okay. Good.
I just wasn't expecting that at all.
I don't think anyone would have expected that. I might be a little punchy.
Pumped full of cortisone again. So if I talk real fast, I'm sorry. I don't know why this keeps getting timed with me being on the show, but here we are.
I love it. So how are
back
you doing?
To peanut butter.
No, back to you cooking apples, weirdo.
Do you not know what apple a la mode is, motherfucker? It's cooked apple.
Yeah, I'm aware, but like, that's okay, but that's...
Do you know what apple pie is?
Yeah, cooked apple.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of...
I don't understand it, so I'm gonna question it.
No, that's more baked than cooked, though.
It's cooked
pie. The same thing, because you're still cooking it. Baking is
Jacob's trying to find
cooking.
An out now.
He's sorry,
like,
I can't resist. I guess it makes
sense
now.
I'm
going to
go with I'm technically right.
What does?
The best kind of
the bread. Forbidden fruit. Of course, God. It's got to be hot.
Oh, man.
So it's this peanut butter and apples.
It's about the texture, isn't it?
Yeah. Peanut butter and apples.
Peanut butter and apples is good.
Yeah,
peanut butter and granulated sugar is better.
Ice cream on top. I wasn't going to say anything because I wasn't totally sure off the top of my head. But yeah, I'm in agreement with Root Beard on that one.
Oh yeah, a la mode means you put ice cream on it. Yeah, that is
correct. Yeah. So again,
you could have a cooked apple and put ice cream on it and get that hot and cold.
Yeah, usually you don't take just a fresh apple and put ice cream on it and say, well, it's apple a la mode. I've never seen that happen.
Like a
it's
baked apple
that.
And you put
yeah. It's baked with it. Typically brown sugar, a brown sugar glaze, and then you put ice cream on top of it, and it's delicious. And I've made that more times than I can count.
I just want to say I'm disappointed that I have not gotten an angry text from my wife yet.
About
cursing,
what?
Cursing you butter. Out, you dumb asshole.
Why?
Because of the peanut butter. How do you forget this already? You insulted her taste of peanut butter, and she does not fuck around when it comes to peanut butter.
All right, well, I'm sorry that, you know, that you married a woman with terrible taste in peanut butter.
Says the person who likes...
Oh, God. Oh, man. Everything got real quiet, and I'm just like, oh, God, what did I do?
I wanted to
do
let
that
it
on
go long
from time to time.
I wanted to let it go longer, but I realized that the truncate silence feature is just going to make it be like, oh, I made this joke. Oh, no one said anything. Ha ha ha. So I'll have to go in and like manually leave a gap to embarrass Jacob.
Would you like me to get you a cricket?
You manually leave a gap to embarrass me on Friday nights usually.
The funny thing is, I don't need a sound effect for crickets because I have a sound effect from Norg.
Oh,
yes.
Perfect.
Let me. I hope the microphone picks this up. Did it?
Yeah.
No.
Or at least I got it on the stream.
Okay. Yeah. That would.
I just turned the stream up for a second, and it did.
You know, but at least like it'll be safe for posterity that you tried to play a sound on the podcast. You know.
Yeah, but I could just edit that in.
Yeah. Or you could edit.
We could watch the live stream on your board.
And it showed that OBS recorded it, and it showed up on stream. So it's just Discord that filtered it out.
Because kinky bananas.
Discord's pretty good about filtering out like coughs and shit like that.
Oh, good, because I do that a lot.
Yeah, you do.
Well, it depends if you cough directly into the mic.
I didn't.
I usually just mute myself.
If I did that, I wouldn't say anything ever the entire stream.
That's fair.
I could mute myself, but I have like two methods of muting. One will mute me on Discord to you, but I'll still be on stream. One can mute me on stream, but I'll still be on Discord. So I would have to do both of them to mute me completely, and that's just a lot of work.
Which just means that we get all the burps and farts, and chat doesn't.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
And the chair creaks.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I get to hear your gas, Joe.
Good. I'm happy you do.
It's from all the food we were just talking about.
Yeah, all the peanut butter and the butter broccoli. Yeah. Should we get to news? Should we talk news?
I don't know. I feel like we should be doing like another 28 or so minutes of nothing but food talk.
I'm so hungry now.
What kind of food talk do you want to talk about?
What kind of food?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I mean,
kinky bananas.
No. All right. I don't want to know where you're sticking all the kinky bananas, but no. All right. So
you use them for sex education. That's right. The best thing to show how to put a condom on.
Yeah.
Cucumbers are usually too fat. They're not curved right.
Go on.
I like this show.
No.
Whoa. We're not going to talk about how, cucumbers are have too much. They've got too much girth.
See, now you're too excited, and I'm going to just pull back. All you get is the tease.
I'm excited.
I might know what I'm doing here.
Hey, you're saying that I'm too excited about this. Joke's on you. I'm on Zoloft. I don't feel shit anymore.
I just think it's funny that you're talking about bananas and cucumbers when Jacob's clearly a string bean kind of guy.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, then you'd have to figure out how many you could shove up to your butt. You know, it becomes a fun contest.
You fumbled on the delivery of that joke.
It becomes the long glove conversation again.
Okay,
fine. So, Bree, tell us about your long glove.
Make fun of my speech. Like, real nice, guys.
Yep.
Yeah, I just fumbled on you messing up the delivery of a joke.
You just fumbled on me?
Yep. Did I?
Yeah, that's what you just said.
Or did the mic cut out? Yeah.
No, you just said that, literally.
I just fumbled on D's nuts.
That sounds about right for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really does, though.
That is. All right, news. PS Plus game. What?
I was talking about apples, and you guys kept interrupting me.
I thought we were talking about assholes at this point.
No, apples, not assholes.
I feel like you lost the train.
Oh, my God. All right. I like Gala, Pink Lady, and Empire. Aki, go.
I like Granny Smith because they're sour and that's it.
Fair. Brie. Brie.
I like green Granny Smith apples. I like some Gala. I like some Honeycrisp.
Oh, hell yeah. Honeycrisp is pretty freaking good, except it's way too damn expensive.
Yeah. I like some Fuji. It's also expensive.
Fuji's good too. Although my issue like with it is as of late, it seems to be getting like a little mealy. I don't know what the heck's going on with like the worldwide supply of that stuff, but
I was just trying to bring it back to video games here. Anyway.
Too bad. It's now Apple talk all the time.
You didn't ask Joe.
Stop staring at the Joe, what kind of apples do you like?
These kind.
Middle finger is not a type of apple, Joe.
Sorry. These kind.
I just said middle finger. Like, making it two of them does not make it a type of apple.
So news of the
week.
You're
the worst.
Ready for news?
Is there any news about Apple?
I don't know. What about? Do we have any oranges we could discuss?
Oranges are disgusting.
Yeah, rhyme with orange, Jacob.
Oh, that was good, actually.
Come on, Jacob.
Completely missed it. Oh no.
I broke Jacob. News of the week, PlayStation Plus game catalog for April. This is the extra and the premium editions. Let's start with premium because that's usually the weakest stuff. And it's the weakest stuff. They're getting Doom, Doom 2, Doom 3 for the PS4. Not the originals. Not like Doom on the PS1. Just the PS4 versions. And then Dishonored Definitive Edition for PS4.
Dishonored's good, at least.
And no PS1 like games.
Doom, people who like Doom will at least enjoy that.
No PSP games.
Of course not.
No PS2 games.
Of course not.
Just four PS4 games from Microsoft.
That is interesting. When you put it in that context.
Yeah.
Lloyd saying they're skipping Doom 4 through 64, or 63.
Again, just giving Doom 64.
Did we get a Doom 32? I don't really remember.
Was there a 32X?
I have no idea.
Doom 32X, maybe?
Was there a 16?
The only Doom I know is the one with the heavy metal song, and it's first-person shooter, and that's it.
The heavy metal song?
That one?
Yeah. Okay. The important one.
Are you talking about the movie?
Oh, yeah, there was a movie of it, too. That was good.
There's two of them, actually.
God, which one did I say?
Isn't there, like, three or four? I thought they made some direct-to-DVD ones.
No, they only made one. You know, the 2005 one got released in theaters with Carl Urban and The Rock, and then
that's the one I've seen. Okay,
a couple of years ago they did a direct to DVD one, which was honestly it was boring as shit. But whoever did the set design, top notch, excellent job on their part. That was literally the only good thing about the movie. I'm dead serious. The set design.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. I like the original movie. That was good. It was campy as shit, but it was good.
Yeah, so, it was entertaining as hell.
This is not movie talk. Anyway, the game's joining the extra lineup. This is the one that's usually good. They usually have a bunch of good games here. And once again, they have a bunch of good games. This one's a weird choice. Sackboy, A Big Adventure, which is one of the actual PS Plus games for the month. That seems redundant. And like a waste of a slot for the PS Plus lineup. But they're also getting Kena, Bridge of Spirits, Riders Republic, Slay the Spire, Monster Boy and the Cursed Kingdom, Bassmaster Fishing, Paradise Killer, let's see, The Evil Within, Wolfenstein The Old Blood, Wolfenstein 2 The New Colossus, and Doom Eternal. More Microsoft games.
Yeah, and most of those games are good.
Yeah, and more Microsoft games.
Yeah. Microsoft needs to get them used to buying their games, that's all.
Microsoft is putting more of their games on PS Plus than Sony's putting on PS Plus.
Oh, sounds about right.
Speaking of premium services, Ubisoft Plus Multi-Access is now available on Xbox. Gives you access to over 60 Ubisoft games, including premium edition content, special bonuses, and 10% off Ubisoft purchases. I was kind of expecting this would be like a $5 addition to Game Pass, but no, it's $18 a month.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Like, that whole setup, that costs more than Game Pass Ultimate. Like, that's ridiculous. I mean, the only thing I can see good coming out of this is that if there is, like, if you want to play the latest Far Cry or Assassin's Creed, but you don't feel like actually owning it, and you just want to rent it for a month, then you just get a month subscription and pay way less. But, like, that's the only... Yeah, I'm just ignoring Ubisoft Plus or whatever the fuck they're calling it.
Yeah, I'm not sold on it. It's way too much, way too little.
It's all Xbox. It's all Xbox One and Series X games too, isn't it? I like, there's so, no 360. Yeah.
Yeah, they said they're. Yeah.
I mean, it might be worth it for not buying that one DLC if I go to mainline it and I just want to do the DLC, because it's cheaper than buying the DLC. But other than that, it's like a maybe 1 month on a good sale and then I'm done with it. It's kind of like a lot of the other streaming services. I go on like a binge, I play, watch the things, and then I cancel a month later because no.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah. That's the way to do all of these service.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a lot of work for the user end, and it doesn't necessarily make the service good. But if they haven't taken, like, it doesn't give them the money that they need to make it sustainable. But if they haven't already priced it at a way that makes it sustainable for people to forget about it when there's so many other things in the market, I don't know. I mean, you get a lot more from Game Pass for a little less money.
Yeah. And honestly, chances are 90% of these games you've already played.
I own most of them already.
Yeah.
Like
all of them. All of them already.
Yeah.
I don't have
Origins. Anno. And it's like been on sale once for close to $12. It's only ever been on sale for as cheap as $35 since then or something stupid like that. And I'm like, that's just too much money for that DLC. Yeah, but I'll spend the $17.99 or whatever for the 1 month when I get through that game and I'm at the point where the only thing I have left is, you know, DLC. And then I'll just knock it out that month and then
providing I'm they done. Have the DLC.
Well, supposedly they do.
Okay.
Yeah, see, Ubisoft Plus, the whole point is you get all, like, everything. Mm-hmm. And that includes day one launches.
Yeah.
So if there's a Ubisoft game coming out you want to try, but you don't want to drop $70 on it, you could drop $20 for a month of plus and play it for a month and see if you want to keep it.
Yeah, see, for me, every game of theirs I want, I buy. So It's like, because like, it's basically all I play is the Watch Dogs and Assassin's Creed games, and that's it. And I'm like, yeah. I don't care about anything else they make, really.
Not even the Far Cry's?
Individual ones that I like, but...
Far Cry's are okay. Like, I'm happy to take them if I can get them for review, but I don't usually go out of my way to buy them.
Uno's the shit.
Uno won't work for me. I have contacted customer service, and they basically told me to F off.
Their customer service is friggin' awful. I complain about the broken achievement in Jeopardy, which has been documented as being broken for years. And they're just like, oh, it sounds like it's on your end. And it's like, no. Like, yeah. If you go up on Reddit for this game, you will see everyone is saying, like, it doesn't pop for them. Like, it's not me. Oh, well, then you should contact Microsoft support.
I started a completely different account, and that was the only way I was able to get Uno to work, but that does not help me get achievements on my account since they broke it. And I have two achievements left. I'm like, also, I like playing Uno with my friends, but we can't. None of us can. It's dumb.
That blows.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying the talk in chat right now. People going back and forth between PS Plus and Game Pass, and... Rootbeer's saying there's like 50 games on PS Plus already. And then Thimber's saying at least first party games don't leave Game Pass. And then Lloyd is like, Quantum Break.
Or no, Raider Biz said that. Raider Biz said that. Coming right back. It's a small licensing issue.
Forza.
It's fine.
Forza's gone. We've seen first party stuff leave Game Pass, and I'm sure we'll see other first party stuff leave Game Pass when licenses run up, but.
Mm-hmm. Who cares? I won't, because I'm going to lose Game Pass soon. Woohoo!
There's still 400 games in there, and there's still like 500 on PS Plus, so you're getting a lot of games no matter where you're playing.
Yeah.
We happy few left Game Pass, but that wasn't published by Microsoft. Something that is being published by Microsoft is Redfall, which is going to be launching on console only with a quality mode of 4K 30 frames per second on the Series X. 60 frame per second mode will come later via an update.
Okay, that doesn't actually bother me particularly.
It doesn't bother me as much as it bothers other people. I'm not on 4K, and
I'm not on 4K, and I don't care about 60 FPS.
I can understand people who have issues with motion sickness and stuff like that. 60 FPS is definitely something that is an improvement from an accessibility standpoint, but... I mean, a lot of people who have those issues might shy away from certain types of shooters for other reasons anyway. So, I mean, meh.
Yeah, for me, I can't tell the difference. I can't tell the difference between 25 and 60, so.
I can tell
the difference. I've played Forza Horizon 5 on 30, and I've played it on 60. It's definitely a lot smoother on 60. It's not as visually pretty, and you get more pop in, I think. But you know, it's good either way you play it. It's a good looking game. If a game looks good, it's gonna look good whether it's running at 30 or 60. It just won't be as buttery smooth. Now, if you're talking about something going at 15 compared to 120, I can understand the difference. But I don't know. Maybe my aging eyes.
A lot of people don't even have the refresh rate on monitors to notice the difference, and people don't even realize that technology is an issue that would be hindering them from seeing the difference in the first place.
Yeah, I love the people who are like, oh, I can't play anything that's not 4K 60 frames per second, and they're gaming on like a 720p TV from 2010.
Yeah, but I mean, realistically though, if you were in like an esports team playing a Twitch-based shooter type game competitively, well then yeah, obviously you're going to be upset.
Yeah, but I feel like that's not what the game is designed for. How many of us are actually like those kind of like that level of esports gamers though?
Yeah, no.
Like
I probably game just as much as all of them. I'm just not as good as they are.
Yeah, same.
Lloyd says, not everything is good in 4K 60. I've watched this show that way.
Oh!
Very true, Lloyd. Very true.
Yeah, watch those biddies drop in 120 frames per second. Oh, wait, no one drops biddies except Jacob, who drops at a time.
He has to keep you wanting for more. Oh,
there's Jacob dropping one at a time. Let's watch it fall. Dink.
The one bit.
Dink.
Boom. Boom.
Dink.
Boom.
Dink. 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 Yeah. Okay.
PC You're welcome, Joe.
Thank you.
I just like that you chose the word dink specifically.
That's why I was laughing.
Speaking of Redfall, I gotta say, I love the difference between the $20 upgrade for Redfall compared to the $20 upgrade for Ghostwire Tokyo. Have you seen the difference in stuff that you get?
No.
With Ghostwire Tokyo, you get like an outfit and a few skins.
Okay, that sounds about right.
For $20. And they advertise that you get, you get the kunai weapon. It's just a reskin of the bow and arrow. For $20. Oh, that kind of sucks. For $20 friggin' dollars. I love deluxe editions. I love bonus content. I love all this shit. Not for $20 fucking dollars. That's just, that's crazy for what they're asking. The bite back upgrade for Redfall is $29.99. It includes the season pass.
Nice.
So you'll get two more heroes. You get a physical patch. You get some extra weapons, some extra outfits, and a steel book for $30. For $30. I'm getting that. I'll get that for $30. Hell yeah. I'm sure the season pass alone is going to be $20 or $30.
But probably.
Yeah. Anyway, PC Game Pass launched in an additional 40 countries this week. So PC Game Pass is spreading to the world.
So like where did it go to now? Or do you just, or is it just 40 countries?
I don't have the list. Oh. I'm not going to read off 40 countries.
I wasn't expecting to read off like 40 countries, but like, you know, maybe like two or three.
Ukraine is one of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Neat.
You know, the whole time I've been saying this, Jacob, you could have looked it up.
No.
Trine 5 was announced from Frozen Byte and THQ Nordic.
Looks good.
I'm excited. I love Trine.
I still have yet to play 4.
I haven't played any Trine, but that one looks good. I want to try.
The only one I ever played was the one that was on 360. That was 2, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm like a lot behind.
Yeah. Diablo 4 is going to be getting new story content every 3 months, according to the devs. So it'll keep you coming back and playing. I'm excited. I love Diablo 3. I had a lot of fun with it. I still go back and play it every now and again and run a few dungeons. I think 4 is going to eat a lot of my life away. Yeah, okay. I'm excited.
Yay.
Yeah,
something sadly, Aki's excited about.
Oh, what? Which one?
Lord of the Rings Gollum.
Yes.
Ooh, yeah. I want
that. Do you want the good news or the bad news?
Oh, give me the bad news. My life.
Well, the bad news is.
Fuck me.
Bad news is. The good news is it went gold.
Yay.
There's no bad news.
Oh, thank God. I'm waiting for you to say, and really, the bad news is this. And I was like, you fucker, don't give me the good news first. Oh, good. I am so excited.
It's fun to fuck with Aki.
For years now. Holy shit.
All right, now, really, there is bad news.
Fuck you.
Endless Dungeon from Sega has been delayed 5 months.
Okay.
That's the bad news.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a different game. We moved on. I didn't say the bad news was related to Gollum.
Okay.
But this bad news, and Gollum, pretty close. They were both movies. They have characters featured in movies because Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League has been delayed to February. I'm just trying to find anything I can to link bad news to Gollum to fuck with you at this point.
And it's working, and I
know. I know it's working. That's why I keep doing it.
I hate you. So fucking.
I'm surprised Jacob's not getting in on this.
My heart rate starts increasing immediately.
That's because I actually remembered something newsworthy, and I had to go dig it up. So.
Well, hold on a sec, because I have one more bit of bad news.
Oh, yeah, no worries.
The bad news is Ninja Turtles Cowabunga Collection has reached 1 million units sold. So congrats to them.
That's good.
It was news. It's in the spring sale, and it's a fairly reasonable price. I wish I could afford right now because I really want it.
Yeah, Cowabunga Collection's pretty solid. If you like the old Ninja Turtle games.
I really do.
Some good shit there.
Wait, hold on. That's on sale or...
Yeah, it's on sale in the spring sale.
Oh, dang. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's on sale for like $27.99, I think, which is a pretty decent price for as new as it still is and how much content's there.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So, Jacob, what kind of news did you have?
I only have one bit of news. It's not movie related.
Is it bad news?
I mean, I don't think so.
For Aki specifically, is it bad news?
Fuck you. No.
No.
Yes?
No.
Oh my God, tell us.
So anyway, some of you know that I'm addicted to Disney Dreamlight Valley. And
yes, you are a child, yes.
Whatever. Anyway.
The bad news is Aki's addicted now too, and they're going to play together.
Hey, there's no multiplayer yet, so no.
Yeah, and you know, chances are if I did play that, I might very well be, which is why I don't play games like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho.
Jacob will be like, I got my fourth house for my friends, and you'll be like, four, I'm at 27.
I probably could outpace it.
Oh yeah, I have no doubt that Aki would. After I saw like your completion rate on your... for your gamer score, I was just like, oh shit. Like,
yeah, I'm a bit obsessive compulsive.
Yeah.
I have an important question, Jacob.
What's up?
Have you purchased Dreamlight Valley?
Yes.
Good. Because if not, you have probably less than 4 months to finish it.
Oh no.
Oh no. That sounds like bad news.
Why?
Because my data scrubbing thing says you have about 4 months left.
Oh. Well, I bought it, so I'm okay.
Well, good. Well, then you can take all the time you want.
Oh, for Game Pass, you mean?
Yes, it's in Game Pass probably in like 4 months.
All right. I was like, is it getting delisted? Are they killing it already?
No, because as my news that I'm trying to share... Mm-hmm.
Is it good news? Loft,
oh, my God. Maybe, if I could get through it.
That's not going to... happen.
See, and now I wonder if I could just say I have one piece of news and it turns out that it's your piece of news and then it was
take his news, do it.
I'm gonna interrupt him enough during his review. I'll just move on.
Bree, what's your news?
Yes!
Microsoft apparently signed a 10-year cloud gaming deal in the UK. And it's along with some other stuff, and in the midst of all of these other lawsuits, I wonder if it's both, you know, their commitment to getting cloud gaming and changing how we do the things, but also in you know, trying to prove that they're not, you know, trying to create this, you know, crazy monopoly that they keep being accused of. So,
no.
What does this have to do with my Disney Dreamlight Valley story?
It doesn't. I was just getting used to me talking.
That's the
over
bad news, Jacob. It has I'm nothing to do with.
I'm gonna super fangirl over the game you're reviewing, and anyway, moving on.
Hate y'all. Anyway, so Gameloft. Nobody's gonna interrupt. Okay, cool. So they put out a survey to all the different to the people playing Disney Dreamlight Valley, asking what would you like to see, like as in like what Disney. Like characters, themes, movies, that kind of stuff. And so stuff that they're looking at includes Aladdin, Winnie the Pooh, which I know will go great in China.
Yeah.
Cinderella, Peter Pan, which interestingly enough, the copyright for Peter Pan in the United States for works related to adaptations of the book and stage play go out or entering to the public domain on January 1st,
2024. Yeah. Mm, they'll find a way to prevent that, though.
Which, of course, if you also notice, like, there's those floating islands off in the distance, which I'm just like, oh, I wonder how they'll get you to fly over there.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have Elsa's castle, though, in the game?
I mean, kind of, but not really. But they need anyway, that
black that's cauldron.
Anyway.
Yes.
I want Iran coming out of the I want Iran and a cauldron.
I want you all
and
to
I want a little
so
I want a guy
this.
With a pig on a heroic quest, all right?
Swear to God.
I want Elsa.
I want you all to muzzle yourselves.
Water horse.
Muzzle
That'd be awesome.
Yourself. Oh my God. Sleeping Beauty, Hercules, Up, Finding Nemo,
Ooh,
Princess and the Frog, Wreck-It Ralph, Tangled, Atlantis, which is like, that's already been hinted at anyway, so it's like, whatever. Emperor's New Groove, 101 Dalmatians, Mulan, Monsters, Inc., Alice in Wonderland, and The Incredibles.
Just mentioned properties they weren't using at that point.
Yeah. Oh
God. Yeah, Jesus, there's so many.
No, because, all right, so what? So I'm going to list, like, the computer that wore tennis shoes, Flight of the Navigator, the cat from outer space.
Hey, yes.
Apple Dumpling Gang.
Those are very good movies. You should.
Parent Trap.
You know what goes good with apple dumplings?
Nothing.
Peanut butter.
I don't know. Terrible.
It depends. Is it Pink Lady or Empire apple dumplings?
It's the correct type of peanut butter. That's what.
Skippy. Yes. Gotcha. It's Skippy.
You are correct.
I can't wait for Ashley to come down from, like, to go to work, because she wakes up in 15 minutes and she's going to be down here. And she's going to check on the cats, and I'm going to be like, honey, did you read your text message? And she's going to come over to this mic, and she's going to be like, fuck you, Jacob, and I'm going to laugh.
So okay. What does she prefer, creamy or crunchy?
Creamy.
Okay, so she likes the right stuff. All right.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's also proposed...
Emperor's New Groove. That's really cool, though. That's really cool that Emperor's New Groove is being considered.
Yeah.
I like The Incredibles, because Mrs. Incredible is fantastic.
No, she's incredible.
Rupert wants to know if Song of the South is being considered.
Oh my gosh.
Oh no. Oh my God.
I mean, while we're at it, can we do that one Mickey Mouse cartoon where he fights the Nazis?
Which one? There's multiple.
Anyway.
Zippity
doodah.
So they're also considering themes for like the Star Path and stuff like that. So it includes Disney princesses, sporty, aka sports jerseys, Disney Channel originals like Kim Possible or Lizzie McGuire.
Okay,
I'd Nightmare be Before Possible, Christmas, Disney villains, Winter Holiday, which is just winter crap.
I just want Pixar, spooky shit. I just want spooky shit.
They actually don't list.
There you go.
Well, yeah. See, that's the thing. Like
that
Nightmare Before Christmas is going to be whatever they're doing for Halloween this year, but. Mm-hmm. Anyways,
I just want to hang out with Jack.
Oh my God. I want you all to
too
shut
bad.
Up. So Pixar, occupational, which is like things like career, such as a gardener or a chef, which is dumb because they already have that. Disney Cruise, because apparently people aren't going on their cruises enough. Retro / vintage Disney style. And vacation, because apparently we all need fanny packs and the luggage.
I don't understand why most of that is being suggested, because it's just crap. It has very little to do with their actual franchises and stuff, and it's just junk. Vacation. That's just shit.
Yeah, but the thing is that it's going to be sports jerseys, but it's going to have like Disney stuff slapped on them. And let me tell you, because I had to sit there and watch a bunch of Twitch streams. I know Joe's going to be like, "No, you actually didn't have to watch," and I'm like, "I know," but I still caught it out of my peripherals. Anyway,
that's on you.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, what people do with like their little valleys or whatever, like I swear to God, they all strip mine the entire valley. Like there are no natural trees like left. Like they just take out all the trees and it becomes this like it honestly becomes like a very Disney like Disneyland-esque like setup where everything looks like it's manufactured and like just so like
that sounds so shit.
Yeah, dude, and all of like the major streamers, they all do this. And I'm like, what the crap? Like, I get that you're bored and like you need stuff to like keep the audience occupied, but like, holy God, like your valleys look like hell.
Yeah, see, like if I were to play something like this, what I would want to do is build like all the like lots of big scenes that you see from the cartoons. That's what I want. I want to live in the universe. That's all I want in these games.
My thing is like how I have
Flash Vic.
How I have it set up is that it's just like I have never removed a tree, like a rock or anything like that. Like I build everything around the landscape. Well, yeah, it is good for me, and it's like for the environment. It
Joe
actually
is totally not part of this conversation. Hey, he told me to shut up, so I've been sitting here quiet, just
And I don't listen to what Jacob
thinking
says,
of death,
so.
Thinking of death
oh, crap,
overtaking me and removing me from this hell.
I listened to names, not to you.
So, Brie, about those gloves.
Well, I mean, that conversation we had earlier about the other stuff, I mean, you know, that we're not going to talk about here.
Peanut butter?
You know.
I mean, that just makes it worse.
I mean,
yeah, it does.
How far up your arm do those gloves go?
To the shoulder. I already said that.
Oh,
that's
I know,
why
it's
peanut Jacob butter made it worse.
I know, but I just need to hear it again.
I mean, you should be more concerned about the length of my arm and not the length of my gloves.
I should be, but I'm not.
Fair.
He already knows traffic he'll cone be up a there.
Fuck it, bring
him.
It on.
The traffic cone is for your safety, so you don't get lost.
You hit the traffic cone, you went too far, just turn around. Hug the wall.
No, Joe, that's where the road closed sign is.
Oh, should we get to reviews?
Yes, yeah, probably. Before I keel over, please.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. First game to talk about tonight is Sherlock Holmes The Awakened, developed and published by Frogwares, released April 11th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $39.99. Experience a nerve-wracking, Lovecraftian adventure rebuilt from the ground up with modern graphics and gameplay. Become Sherlock Holmes and find yourself at the heart of the terrifying Cthulhu mythos as you investigate a series of mysterious disappearances in Europe and the U.S. Aki and Brie both played this one. Aki, start us off. What's going on in Sherlock Holmes The Awakened?
I would rather Brie take this first.
Really?
What?
I like listening to her talk.
Oh my gosh. Well,
She sounds so much smarter than me. So.
I was going to skate by on this one because I feel like I played for far too long and got absolutely nowhere. And I made a complaint about it during my stream. And then I went back today. And I realized two very important things. One, someone in my chat decided to press the crank it to 11 button, and I started on Moriarty difficulty. And two, I didn't realize that there was, in fact, a tutorial to remind me of the things. If only I had pressed the select button, I didn't have to go to the main menu, and I could have looked at the how to do things. But I can tell you that my experience on Moriarty difficulty was never a little challenging considering it had been like a year and change since I played chapter one. And I felt like an absolute idiot. I think I spent 3 hours and then I finally finished chapter one and I was like, what is wrong with me? But
so we had very similar experiences, except for I wasn't playing on Moriarty difficulty. All right, great. So I'm useless. Okay, cool.
Oh, that changes nothing. Yeah. Good job, Jacob. We both jumped on that one.
So yeah, I will say, you know, coming from the perspective of the previous games, you know, I kind of liked the chapter one reboot to the younger Holmes, which is a little different than like the older grizzled kind of, you know, version that we're used to in not just this series but like other Sherlock Holmes mythos, whatever you want to call. But like, you know, we've got a little further extension of that and, you know, it further progresses that storyline. And we actually start out at Baker Street this time, which was like a lovely familiar thing before we start to get transported into this Lovecraftian sort of thing. And, you know, so you get a little bit of this really familiar stuff. You're back in London, you know, in and around all that, but then you're going to get transported to this other, you know, very dark tale that, you know, connects to Frogwares. Other love, which is, you know, the Lovecraftian stuff with Sinking City and other stuff that they've done along those lines. And I think that mashup is a really good one for them. I think that they can do that really well. I sadly did not get far enough in the game because I was on Moriarty difficulty to actually experience the Lovecraftian elements other than that there are people going around abducting people. And that's kind of your hook for what's going on. But I did enjoy kind of playing through the, like I said, getting back because, you know, you start out chapter one and you're in like Cordova or whatever. And it's a very different kind of experience that they wanted to kind of shake you out of the normal homes and kind of show you this younger new reboot of their character. But now we're getting into that familiar homes that, you know, we're kind of easing back into what we already know about, you know, Baker Street and that whole life. So that's pretty much what I got to say on that so far.
Okay, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. I haven't played Chapter 1 for more than just like maybe a half hour of it. I haven't even finished the first level of it.
I didn't finish the game, but I did play at least through Cordova and a little bit further.
Okay, how do they do deductions in that game? Is it like all the other standard mainline newer games like Devil's Daughter and stuff? Or is it more like this game?
It's more like this, but okay. It was not. There were some minor changes in this that I felt without having the tutorial again. And I was like, oh, it's a shame they didn't do it. Well, they did do a tutorial. They just didn't like hand it to you like, oh, here's the optional tutorial. Do you want to take it? They're like, no, we're just going to throw it in the menu and hope you deduct your way to it. And I was like, I felt like an idiot when I went back to it this morning. I really did.
So for everyone else who isn't in the know, in lots of the prior games, and in this one, you find clues because you're fucking Sherlock. Of course you find clues. That's what he does. And all those clues go into his mind because he's a super genius. And he...
Mind palace.
Yep, into his mind palace. And basically you get the option to go to this deduction board is what it's called. And there you see all the different clues. And in lots of the prior games, you would be able to just click on a clue and then click on another clue and they'd combine together if they did, or if they didn't, that clue would just change color and you could pick the first clue and a different second clue and you could just keep doing that until you got all the answers that you needed with it.
You have to get all of the, in this case, you have to get all of that clue piece in the Mind Palace. Like each clue might have more than one piece, and until you find all of those pieces, it might not be a valid connection, which was a bit of my struggle. Yeah.
And I found something. The reason why I didn't get as far into it is because I thought there was a bug in the game. In the deduction board in this game, how I told you you could keep just trying deductions in all the prior games until you figured out what worked. In this one, if you use deductions and they don't go together, they just fuck off into the ether, never to be fucking seen again.
Yeah, and sometimes I felt like I used that one deduction piece and it didn't take, but when I put it together with two things, then it would take, even if one of them was still wrong.
Yeah, like
I did run into a couple of little things like that, but again, I was on Moriarty difficulty.
Yeah, like
who knows?
For me, it screwed me up because I contacted the dev because I was like, oh, I must have found some sort of glitch. This is because I required three different pieces of evidence, one from each of three different areas. And I kept trying different combinations, but I could only try twice because then all of one of the types were just fucking gone because they just disappeared from the list. And I was like, now I'm soft locked. I can't continue because there's nothing I can do now because it.
But you just might not have found
the right thing.
The right thing. But that's a difference between my experience and your experience is that it removed the things that were wrong, which is actually would have been really helpful to me. It was like, no, everything is valid. Figure it the fuck out.
See, I would prefer it that way because then it'd be more like the prior games where you just keep trying until you get it right. That's what I like because I'm stupid. I do not logic deductions very well. So well, I always had the just brute force thing. The fact that I couldn't do that with this, I thought was a glitch. And it took a few days before the devs got back to me and was like, oh no, that's not a glitch. That just means those aren't the right answer. I was like,
yeah. And I felt like I couldn't tell because things weren't clustered together at first on my map, the way that I found data. I was like, oh, it's pretty evenly spaced all around or, you know, whatever, as I'm flipping through the three different types. And I'm thinking, okay, why is it not doing anything? And then then things started to fill in. I'm like, oh, it's because I don't have all the info. And I mean, like picking from the list of things that I had discovered and were available, I was pretty sure I had picked some of the right things. And it turns out
right?
I was totally wrong. And, you know... And also when you're doing like the Mind Palace recreation of the event, I struggled so much because there until you find certain pieces, there won't be visual options either. And so I thought I could only choose between the servant boy or servant man was actually doing the drugs versus the mystery man trying to smoke him out, or, you know, like, but there wasn't that third option that I needed to get, or, you know, it wasn't even that. There was another section where I don't know, I just couldn't find the trigger point on the floor, despite my best efforts, that I knew had to be there because of a clue. So I kind of struggled with the interface a little in that section, and that was really where I spent most of my time, was in that chapter, trying to figure out what happened to the servant.
I am very much in the same pale as that, because in all their other games, you couldn't start that stuff until you had all of the data
needed
to figure it out. In this game, you don't have to have it all, and that sucks. But
realizing that that's a thing, I just have to adjust my expectation of how to solve the puzzle, and there could be a benefit to that method of thinking that might be closer to things in the original literature, if I'm being honest, and the actual, like, type of thought that he used in terms of deductive reasoning. And
I extrapolate things from
that. Right. And so, like, it just, I think without what I was expecting to be as a tutorial, like, that was my tutorial, you know, hard way. But I can go back and redo that, and I think I would better understand, and I would actually maybe enjoy this version better, because it does, like, okay, based on this and this, like, you know, everything else I've said or heard, like, that can't be what happened. So I've got to be missing a clue somewhere. And that's actually how I ended up finally solving my way through it. I don't really say stumbling my way through it. But, you know, going into that mindset and, like, redoing it, I think this actually could be a much more rewarding presentation. And then on top of that, I'm just really excited about the Lovecraft stuff. So I was going to go back to The Mermaid today, but I got totally sucked into another game. Anyway.
Uh-oh, we'll find out about that one later, I guess.
I'm kind of iffy on whether I like the concept of this one more than the prior ones that I've played, because I really like knowing, okay, there's 18 clues here, and then it tells you found 17. Okay, I need to go find that last one, versus keep looking until you think you got them all, and, you know, that's fucking life. I don't like that, because... Yes, it's more realistic, and it's much more Sherlock, but I'm not Sherlock. Sherlock's a super genius of logic and reasoning and deduction.
Yeah.
I'm fucking not. I know. Fuck off. So I prefer the much more simplistic, more gamey, more gamified version of it, personally, just because I think it's going to jive with people more than this one is. I think this is going to be really hard for a bunch of people unless they watch a walkthrough, which, I mean, fair enough. I don't blame anyone for that. I've done it for some of the prior games because some of the things have been really hard even, so I totally get that. But I think not having it being more gamified is going to turn a lot of people off, sadly.
It's fair.
Well,
I would also like to point out one other thing, though, before we get to exactly what Joe is about to say, which is that the developers of Frogwares have been doing this from the Ukraine, and kudos to them for getting this done. And if you have thoughts or feelings about that and want to support some people who have been working their ass off despite everything going on, that is an option for you.
Yeah.
Indeed. And the game is sitting at $39.99. There is also a deluxe edition for $49.99, or you could buy the upgrade for, I believe, $12.99, that includes some cosmetic wardrobe DLC and 6 bonus quests that you could take on.
I did one of the bonus quests, too, and it was a short quest. I feel like some of the others might be a little longer, but it was
they're all good. Short.
Yeah, okay. But it was still pretty good. It was...
Well,
yeah,
$40 for the game, $50 for the deluxe. What are your thoughts?
Yeah,
I would say buy it. I mean, I understand Aki's hesitation with some of the things that, you know, might put it, like, in that caution toward try it. But, you know, if you have the opportunity to do so, and I don't remember if there was a demo or not on it, but if you've played the other games, I mean, I think it's a fair assumption that, like, you're going to have an okay time with this one, at least. So,
If you really like Sherlock games, I think this is definitely a total buy it. If you get them just to be like, oh, it's a quick, easy 1K, this one's probably a not for you one, because you're going to have a much harder time with this one. But if you like it, I think this is totally for you.
Cool. All right. Next up is Raven's Watch, developed by Pastet Games, published by Nacon, released April 6th on Steam for $19.99. Fallen heroes of old folk tales and legends, you are on the verge of a crucial battle against the nightmare invading and corrupting your world. A roguelike action game from the creators of Curse of the Dead Gods, playable in solo or online co-op. Tim Agabus checked this one out on the last episode, but our friend Andy Sperry wrote in some coverage as well. Figured we would read on this episode, and since you're here, Bree, do you want to take care of this?
I could totally do that. I would love to read for Andy. He's an awesome dude.
And everyone likes your voice here, so.
Yay!
Very.
All right, so here's what Andy Sperry has to say. Ravenswatch by Pastet Games, published by Nacon, is a beautiful stylized action roguelite with fast-paced combat. Having recently arrived on consoles and Steam, does this game have what it takes to stand out from the competition? By now, gamers should be familiar with the roguelite genre, in which players repeat the cycle of fight, die, repeat, in hopes of gaining enough skills, items, or levels along the way to defeat the next enemy, boss, etc., to progress further. The system has become very popular, and we continue to see more titles follow the same approach. Raven's Watch is no different in that aspect, but it does differ in some ways. The game takes place in the dreamland of Reverie, a place that classic storybook characters and heroes of legends call home. A nightmare force has tainted the land with those within. A group of heroes are then guided by ravens, the guardians of Reverie, to repel the corruption, thus forming the Raven's Watch. You start off your solo or cooperative adventure as one of four available heroes: Scarlet, the Pied Piper, Beowulf, or the Snow Queen. Group adventures allow only one of each hero type per map, and there are two more heroes that become available as the player progresses through the main story. Each character is professionally voiced and designed, displaying a personal set of skills and attacks that match their character story. For example, the Pied Piper summons rats, uses musical notes to attack enemies from afar, while Beowulf uses his sword and shield to battle up close, gaining aid from his pet worm to apply burn damage to his attacks. Attacks also need to be timed well throughout this game, leading to more calculated and less button-mashy battles. Characters' abilities and movesets can also completely change based on the game's day and night cycle. One of the game's more noticeable examples for that is Scarlet, who's based on the Little Red Riding Hood, who transforms from her human form into a powerful wolf during the night. There's always a timer running during gameplay, and is signified by the day-night cycle. These cycles affect not only heroes, but enemies' behavior and attacks as well. The timer has significant effect on gameplay, as you only have so many days to level up and gain skills before the area's boss is revealed. Once the timer's up, the player or party is warped to the main boss for the final battle. This all works out to playthroughs that can be completed in roughly half an hour, which is a nice feature for those who want a quick run without huge time investments. New difficulties and abilities for each character unlock after each successful run-through, leading to more ease or challenge in future runs. Along the way, players will find randomly placed areas of interest on the map. This makes each playthrough different and adds replayability. Few areas of interest are revealed upon starting the level, with more becoming available as the player or party explores the map. Areas include side quests, optional bosses, healing fountains, chests, vision towers, which reveal more areas of interest, and even the Master Nightmare, a tentacle beast that thrashes around, dealing devastating attacks. This is the area's main boss and can be activated by a player at any time within the days leading up to the final battle. More main area bosses will be added in future updates. Defeating enemies or completing side quests, such as gathering straw bricks for the three pigs, will earn players a new skill, experience points, or dream shards, the currency that's used to level up your character skills. Challenges are based on color code system, which signifies how easy to difficult the task, or the risk or reward will be. Warp zones placed along the map as well, offering a helpful aid to get back to points of interest much faster or warp to new areas discovered by teammates. There are plenty of ghoulish enemies, expertly crafted and presented with unique challenges and attacks of their own. Oftentimes, many enemies will be grouped together near a point of interest, guarding it with devastating long-range and close-up attacks. Careful skill is required to defeat swarms without being overrun. Enemies have both a health bar and a stagger bar. Filling up a foe's stagger bar by attacking them is sometimes the only way to victory, as it gives players the chance to hit without recoil. Solo runs? Slightly easier than a full party of four in my experience, because enemies scale pretty heavy with the party size. A fun challenge, but not without some quick deaths. Reviving a team member or using a Raven's Blade to revive yourself.
We have an important update. Ashley, do you have a message for Jacob?
Oh, go fuck yourself, Jacob.
There we go. She has spoken. Do you have any other messages?
Everybody at Geisinger agrees. Jif rocks.
There you go, Jacob.
Right. You have been yelled at.
Yeah.
The cycle is complete.
Yeah. So, Raven's Watch.
Yeah, so well, where are we? We're talking about reviving team members, because if you are anti the correct peanut butter, you may need to revive your team members. But here in Raven's Watch, you revive a team member using Raven's Feathers to revive yourself, which is another nice feature of Raven's Watch. In both solo and multiplayer campaigns, only 4 revives are available, so use them only if your teammate can't help you before your 30-second death clock counts down. There's plenty to discover in Raven's Watch, which is currently in early access. Another trend that got me thinking about the implications of releasing an incomplete game. Looking into the developer's notes, they express that early access is a nice way to present a title while working closely with players to improve the gameplay experience. It gives the community a chance to support a new game with their feedback. Pastech successfully used the same approach with the previous title, Curse of the Dead Gods. They also have an active Discord server and a roadmap for the future of Raven's Watch with more characters, levels, enemies, and skills to be added along the way. It's a very well-crafted game. While early access presents some issues...
See, it's not that easy after a while. People make fun of me.
I know, right?
When I stumble.
Oh, my goodness. But while early access presents some issues... I can't even say the word now. presents some issues such as enemy scaling and the occasional glitched attack or frozen screen, Pastech Games is doing what they do best, developing and fixing anything brought to their attention. While the idea of having a full game upon release is sometimes preferable, this game is already good enough for me to recommend and enjoy with others. Looking forward to what's coming next in the game, and I encourage those who enjoy roguelites to pick it up. Raven's Watch has some great potential to stand against its competition. Thank you for reading. Andy Sperry, otherwise known as Sperry Berry Beast.
Sounds good.
Sounds like he's saying awesome. Go for it.
Yeah, I know Tim was kind of on the fence about it, but it seems like Andy really enjoyed his time. And hopefully this one makes the jump to console when it's ready like Dead Gods did.
And it sounds like they're already planning to, based on what he said in here and what I've seen. And I was on the fence about whether or not I wanted to check it out, but honestly, after reading this, I'm curious to see if my regular group would be interested in giving it a shot when it comes to consoles.
Curse of the Dad Gods. next game, Murderous Muses, developed and published by Deveki Studios, released April 12th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $13.99. It's been a year since controversial artist Mordecai Gray was murdered. Now a new exhibition is opening on the anniversary of his death, featuring 6 of his most famous portraits, each one a potential suspect in his murder. He plays a security guard exploring the gallery in the echoing hours to uncover clues about the crime, solve puzzles, and use the Eye of Mordecai to bring the portraits to life, restoring the past to find his killer. Jacob and Bree, both of you checked this one out. Jacob was worried that you were going to... Bree, you were worried about stepping all over Jacob's review. Jacob was like, oh, let her tap. And just let her go crazy.
Go ahead.
It's the Bree show tonight.
See, and I was going to just like totally interrupt with like, I'm sorry. Have you heard the good word of my Lord and Savior, Luxiris? And just keep saying that until you relented. That was really my whole plan.
Well, then Jacob, you start.
I was going to like girl. So yeah, go for it. I want to hear your experience because I obviously have too much positive things to say about this and I'm going to fangirl. So start out with an actual review here, please.
So in this game, it is one of those like full motion video types of video games. But you're also exploring the grounds quite a bit. So it's kind of like Myst in a way, except not nearly as like infuriating. And Seventh you know, best. It's yeah, and it's actually
I'm telling you, that's actually one of their influences, I would guarantee.
Okay. I mean, yeah. It's been years since I played that one, so
it's one of my favorites.
Okay, maybe you should have let off on this review. But anyway.
I'm still waiting for her to interrupt you.
Have you heard the good word of my Lord and Savior, Luxiris?
There we go.
God. Anyway, So you're the security guard, and you're tasked as one of your duties each night is that you have to take these paintings that got delivered to the art gallery, and you have to figure out where exactly they're put. But on top of it, you know, the artist who painted all this stuff was murdered many years ago, and six of his last subjects were very famous people all about town, and one of them is suspected as having, you know, committed the crime. And so, of course, you know, even though it's been a year and nobody's been able to figure this out, somehow you, newbie security guard, is going to figure out the murder. But that's because you're also getting tuned in with a strange voice that keeps telling you what to do and how to do it, along with memos that your boss leaves you. And so initially it's just, you have to like get these portraits up, and then you have to listen to like what the narrator has to say. And on the first night, it seems very dry or whatever, but then like your first real night that you're there and placing the stuff around, the narrator has this very sinister, sarcastic, like you could tell that they hated everybody in this town. And
I think he's the original night guard, by the way. That's one of my theories. I have a lot of theories.
Ooh.
Yeah. He mentions in one of the notes he leaves that he might be buried at the museum, and he's only there during the night gallery section of the game that he talks to you, and his interpretation goes into the paintings. I think he's the reason you have your job.
Clever.
Go on.
Okay. so you eventually have to figure out which one of these six people did it, and there are some puzzles attached to it, and the neat thing about this is that no two games of this game are going to be, or playthroughs, I guess you would say, no two playthroughs are going to be the same, and so you can have a different killer each time, which I thought was kind of cool. At the same time, it makes reading over a guide for this game to be incredibly difficult, because then it becomes like, you know, like the Resident Evil 3 water treatment plant, where it's just like, too bad, guy. It's a different thing each time. So you're just gonna have to figure this one out on your own.
Oh no, you have to figure out a game on your own.
I feel like there is a potential for certain guide work to be written for this, because there are seeds, and there are some seeds could still, I feel like they have done in the past where there are certain triggers based on certain things, and a clever person that took the time might be able to say, if you get a seed that has these intros from the Unsolved Mysteries videos, and this, if any of your characters say this in the key interviews that they have for night three, they are the killer, like has happened in previous games. But this game is so much more complex than their previous games as far as their choice points. And the fact that they have seeds to be able to do this is incredibly freaking cool. And there's like hundreds of thousands of potential seeds coded into this, because my very first seed was like 123,696 or something. So you could tell someone, but it still potentially randomizes the killer, but it has the same base of, and you could feed people seeds at least to help clear out some of the achievements, which I thought was cool. So yeah.
So anyone have anything else to say about the game?
I've got a lot of things. Do you want to hear what I have to say? I said that a little too loud. Hi.
Yes.
Bree, what are your thoughts on the game?
Oh my gosh, I have so many thoughts. First of all, total rabbit hole. Yes, obviously Carnage. Buy the game right now. Buy all the other games if you haven't played the other games. So if you guys don't know, DeVecchi Studios has made, this is the fourth in a series, and this one seems less obviously connected at first, but it is so very connected. And you can play each of their games individually. But I feel like your experience is going to be so much richer if you play the other games, which is The Infectious Madness of Dr. Decker, The Shapeshifting Detective, and Dark Knights with Poe and Monroe. So, Murderous Muses, I mean, I went on for 5 hours last night, basically rambling about fan theories and connecting all the things. Yeah, I actually just finished my second run-through. and am sort of on my third, because I'm going to get every achievement, and I just might be that clever person who writes at least some of the things that help people get the achievements, because I've kind of started to get into this groove of it, and I have some ideas on how to get a couple of those achievements faster, just because, yay, achievement hunting, but, you know, this is already, I guess there's Steam achievements that people care about, and I know this is on PlayStation, so trophies. And it's supposed to be coming to Switch, but it did not get launched at the same time, I think. But so, one of my, like, deep, dark theories about the first game, I'm trying to prove it, and I'm going to go back and I'm going to play the Infectious Madness of Dr. Decker over again to connect it to some things in here, and I don't want to, like, spoil all the things for you guys, but I went on for 5 hours last night about all the things, and I realized more stuff this morning. So this is so different though than the previous games in that it's not just the FMV. I would say that the interview style goes back to a little bit more of how Dr. Decker was in some of its presentation. I also feel like Dr. Decker had more of a Lovecraftian theme, and so does this one. Whereas the others kind of like went into this more Twin Peaksy vibe, which I totally love. You know, kind of followed more of that David Lynch train. But there's also returning actors is a common thing that play different characters, but sometimes they play very similar characters, which I think is part of the meta. I'm going to be super honest, because even though you don't see them, when you go to do your police interviews, having seen a bunch of the footage each night, you can go and listen to essentially what you're doing is you're seeing into the past by touching the paintings, like a kind of psychometry, which is one of the comments you can actually get from your boss, Sasha. And that's why when we put these photos up or these paintings up, we're seeing these images of what happened when they were getting they're like negotiating their portrait to be painted, or they're having this interview with Mordecai Gray, no relation to Dorian Gray, right? and you find out over time that like maybe there's some supernatural stuff going on in there, and so you start to realize like, okay, maybe there's a part of them that's been affected by this painting, or you know, whatever. Again, I don't want to give too many spoilers. But when you do go to the police interview, which is kind of by your front desk, it's the interviews you get to see with the police are based on what you did during that day with the portraits, what words you selected on. And they give you a really nice grid of things that will give you the bare minimum information you need to know that connects to your Unsolved Mysteries video at the beginning. Like, that's your hook. And so each playthrough, now that, like I said, I'm kind of starting on my third one, gives you like a little bit of extra insight, and it rolls over so you can collect more and more information. And when you get into the night gallery in the staff room, like during the night gallery portion, you get these rooms that unlock for extra things that you can get to your characters. There's extra secrets to unlock. And then you meet a mystery character that connects to some of the bigger mythos of the game, right? The whole series. And it's about this secret woman that might have been whispering in Mordecai's ear. And it's played by Rachel Cowles, who I believe is related, could be the daughter of Linda and Tim Cowles, who created the game. So she's a returning actress to the series as well. And I might even argue that her character could be the same character with a new name in a previous game. The voiceover of Higgins, the night gallery, maybe former guard, is done by Will Harrison Wallace, who has been in a lot of other things. Some of them I thought were kind of funny. He was in a game I enjoyed called The Assembly. He was also in Thomas and Friends, as in Thomas the Tank Engine.
Interesting.
He played Gordon, apparently. But I also heard meows. That was awesome.
That was Simon. Being Simon. All on my lap and like, hey, pay attention to me.
But Will Harrison Wallace's narration for Higgins really is part of what pulled me, that and the puzzle style and even the animation style, the background music, into what I felt was this influence of The Seventh Guest. And when you finally get to choose your killer, there's another little nod there that I felt really came back to The Seventh Guest. And since it's one of my favorite games ever, I really love that combination of both the FMV from the Devecki games already that I love and The Seventh Guest. Just like that was the perfect combo for me. The other thing is, you know, again, the Lovecraftian thing. This is the first time we've really, in the series, been outside of the main area or main town where there is some sort of, you know, like thinning of the veil and that sort of thing. And it's just, it's so much bigger than their previous games and so much more. And if you're expecting it to just be another FMV, I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised at the layers and the potential for this game. And I would just highly encourage people to check it out, even if they're not interested in the rest of the series. But I guarantee you, if you go back and you play the other games, the rabbit hole of cool stuff that you're going to find is just, it's going to blow your mind. I love it so much.
Cool.
So yeah, please buy it.
No, I guess I don't need to ask, but it's $13.99. I need an official verdict.
Do it.
Jacob, what about you?
Okay.
Go ahead, Jacob.
Oh, I was going to say, I'd recommend it. I just wish it, you know, there was a little bit more hand-holding.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot.
For you to understand some of the mechanics of the game. However, I mean, at that point, you might as well just do multiple playthroughs once you figured it all out. Because the guilty person is randomized. So it would have been nice, but
I'm doing a speed run now to prove that you can speed run it. And what you have to do to speed run it. So if you just want to get to like different killers and see what their endings are, or there's an achievement for getting the killer without like still having a bunch of the Mordecai beads or Mordecai marbles or whatever they're called, left over. I feel like I found a way to speed run that. I'm testing that theory now. So yeah. What was your question, Aki?
Who is the cute redhead and who does she play?
Aislinn Death. Oh no, wait, she's not in this one. She's not the redhead in this one. But Aislinn Death. No, so Aislinn Death is the Undertaker in this one, but she's the redhead in all the other games. The one in this one, oh gosh, what is her name? I had it. She's new to the series. Like, I've never seen her here. But normally the redhead is Aislinn Death. And if you didn't see the Undertaker, her name is Lilith in this. You should go check out Aislinn Death. She's a fabulous actor. I think you would just like Aislinn Death as well. But let me find you the redhead's name because
yeah, yes. I know the redhead from all the prior games, and I just assumed she was in this.
She is in this, but she's blonde in this, which is like wild. But no, the redhead in this one, her character's name is Dominique, and yeah, she's a bit saucy. She is. Ooh. I know. Well, so and there's also the like whole noir redhead in Dark Knights of Poem Nero that's played by Lea Kennard. Because she plays the title character as opposed to Aislinn Death. But yes.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of, I think.
Yeah, I know. Well, Aislinn Death is, she plays Violet in Shapeshifting Detective, and I think maybe also in Poe and Monroe. She's in all of them, but I love her. I follow her on Twitter.
Okay.
I think I also follow Lea Kennard, but yeah. I'll have to find the name and send it to you because my internet foo is failing me at this particular moment. I'm like so excited.
Okie dokie. That's all. I just wanted to know crushes. That's all.
Oh, right?
Oh, Aki.
Someone messaged me earlier. No, someone messaged me earlier today and said that, and this was a male friend of mine. Says I have such a crush on Katie Sackhoff, and he's watching. You know, whatever Star Wars thing, The Mandalorian, which I haven't seen yet. And I'm like, so do I. And he's like, but you haven't even seen her as a redhead. Cause I was all just like, because, you know, I'm all for Cara Thrace. And he's like, but no redhead. And I'm like, yeah, that's nice.
Redhead makes the world go round. Yeah.
She can be whatever. And I still have a crush on her.
Yeah. I don't know who that is either. Send me that name. I'll look them up too.
All right. We'll do that. Dominique is played by Bex Finch. There you go.
Okay. Nice. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Bree, that is it for you. We will let you go and so you can get your own stream started.
Where I gotta go shoot people or something.
Where could people keep up to date with you and what you're doing?
Well, I'm on the Twitter and the Discord and on this Twitch thing. Pretty much Layton agreed it just about everywhere that including Hotmail because that's a thing. But yeah, you know, come watch me if you want. Although, you know, I don't want to take you away from watching the SML podcast for its live recordings because sometimes we bump up against each other like right now.
Yeah.
But
we I'll stole be back you here for next a half week. Hour to
I know. Well, next week you get me for the whole show.
Yeah.
I already canceled my stream. I am going to put on my purple wig. Those of you who know. I am not going to put on my birthday tiara because it's not my birthday. I've got two bottles of mead ready to go. I'll start drinking an hour before the show.
Sweet.
And I've got a cowboy hat, and we are going to unicorn princess. Drunk unicorn princess will be on your show next week.
I'm loving this already.
So there you go. I'll take pictures. And because, you know, it's a podcast, you can't see me.
Yeah, so but we'll take pictures. Something for the show image on YouTube.
Yeah, there you go. Oh. Drunk Unicorn Princess it is. All Sweet. Right, anyway, you guys have a great night. Thanks for letting me ramble at you. Bye-bye.
Have a good one.
See ya.
See ya.
All right, next up is a game called Unwording, developed by Frostwood Interactive, published by Frostwood Interactive and Dino Digital. Shout out to Mr. Freight for dropping a sub 6 months, three in a row.
Thanks, welcome. Jacob. You're welcome.
Where was I? Unwording, releasing April 27th on Steam. Oh my God, they're going to hear this and be like, what the hell did we get into? Releasing April 27th on Steam for $4.99, Unwording is a game about overcoming negative self-talk, solve word puzzles, explore the neighborhood through multiple perspectives, and help Tom find a new perspective on life over three painful but cathartic days. We got someone new for this one. One of my Rassle cast buddies, or one of Rassle buddies with Tim and Big Adam, Dave K, has written in a review for this one. This is what he's got to say. Unwording is a short game about being depressed. It also requires some very delicate needle threading to review, because while it handles important and relevant topics like depression and loneliness with care, it shares that distinction with several other games centering mental health that aren't really fun to play and barely qualify as video games in some cases. Mechanically, Unwording is simple enough. You control the main character's movement with the arrow keys using the E key when prompted to interact with the environment. These prompts introduce a minigame where you can use letter blocks to spell out self-talk phrases reacting to things the character sees. In the first part of the game, they're all negative, reflecting the character's low opinions of his social and financial situations. The letter block minigame is the gamiest part of Unwording, and if we're being honest, it's pretty annoying. The blocks can be rotated up and down, left and right to display different letters, which gets repetitive fairly quickly. Worse, the letters don't always face the right way, so even when you find the right letter, you still have to rotate it over and over to align it properly. In the second part of the game, the negative self-talk blocks are jumbled, and the player must use the letter keys to both rotate and tilt the blocks to spell out new, more affirming phrases. The second minigame adds new dimensions to the previous one without really improving on it, if that makes any sense. That said, Unwording isn't without charm. Its aesthetics change over the course of the game, starting in two-dimensional monochrome and gaining color, depth, and detail as you play. It successfully illustrates the shift from a depressed mindset to a healthy one. It's a clever use of graphics to communicate progression and achievement. The word puzzles, while clunky, hint at the utility of cognitive behavioral therapy and recognizing and shifting thought patterns. This concept is reinforced by the game's third act, in which the main character interacts with people and dogs in his community. This is not a cynical or pessimistic game, and it's better for avoiding those common pitfalls. But as always with games like these, the question must be asked, is it really a game? Video games can address mental health issues thematically, and Celeste and Night in the Woods do so to great effect. I'd put The Cat Lady, Kentucky Route Zero, and Disco Elysium as examples too. However, more direct simulations of depression rarely work. As someone with clinical depression, I feel confident saying the experience doesn't easily lend itself to functional game design or mechanics, and the games attempting it feel too much like homework. Video games are supposed to be fun, after all. Unwording only has one genuine gaming element, and its novelty wears off pretty fast. There's also an observation of class to be made here. Depression is commonly presented as a sad white person with an office job, but how different would Unwording be if the main character wasn't white or employed? What if he had multiple roommates instead of a one-bedroom convenient to public transportation? What if he still lived at home with other relatives or in his car? What if he was disabled? Middle-class ennui is nothing new, and office work is certainly alienating and unessential, but depression isn't contained to one identity or environment, which is a blind spot in these games and one reason why they're said to lack meaningful insight. It's also a lot to ask of Unwording, which has simple intentions and makes no claims otherwise, but there have been enough games like it over the past few years to offer that critique. In the end, unwording is less of a game than a therapeutic exercise, ideally for people who are newly diagnosed or just beginning their mental health journey. If you're currently going through it and need some comfort gaming food, this game's worth a try. Outside of those specific contexts, it may not be what you're looking for. I don't know. For $5, it sounds like something I might want to try out just to see how it handles the negativity and presents the world in a different light, and to see if I could find that optimism that the game is trying to show you.
Yeah, what consoles was this for?
Right now it's only on Steam.
Okay, can you toss us a link? Because that actually sounds like a really interesting game.
Grab the link. As usual, you could always check out the links in the write-up below the video thing that you're watching, and there's links there, and you can like click them and shit like that. They're handy. Thank you, Dave, for writing that in, and I believe he's going to be joining us on a future episode to chat about something else.
Nice.
So we'll have to keep an ear out for him, and we'll move on. Next game is Dogfight, a sausage bomber story, developed by Katsu Games, published by Houndpit Games, released April 14th on Xbox Series X and S, PS4, PS5, Switch, and PC for $17.99. Arcade shoot-em-up action is back. Team up with the entire family for explosive action, signature humor, and thrilling adventure. Join the Sausage Bomber Corps for daring missions to defend the nation of Relishtonia against the more world-conquering ambitions from the mysterious Vega Nation. Jacob, tell us about your time with Dogfight, a sausage bomber story from the one, the only, Mr. Sausage Fingers.
Shout out to the Outright Games crew there, I guess. So anyway, so this game's a shmup, very similar to, graphics wise, it reminded me a lot of like Heavy Weapon, from way back in the day on the Xbox 360. Although the characters also kind of remind me of more of like a, Advance Wars kind of setup, art style, I should say. But anyway, so yeah, it's just, I mean, there's not a lot of depth to this game. It's a shmup. It's a side to side one instead of the usual top down, that you might see. But yeah, it's just, you have to use your plane. Occasionally you may also have bombs, but, you shoot stuff, you upgrade all your weapons, as you can, you score points, and hopefully you're going to defeat the boss as it goes on. Thankfully the difficulty is, like, honestly, I was doing pretty well, which means that it's probably incredibly easy for everyone else. But yeah, it's just,
I sucked and I did okay, so it can't be that hard.
Yeah, I am. So if I'm doing all right, you should too. But yeah, it's just like, you just go through all the stuff, like, you know, the main general guy who you deal with does this, like, he has this like weird like pouty face that like he looks like during every single mission. It's kind of weird, but yeah, like I didn't get far enough to know whether or not he's behind everything or if he's just naturally pouty, but
you'll have to play the game to find out.
so you go through each area and like you can learn, like the story reveals like a little bit more about each of the different fighter pilots that you can play as. But I mean, it's a standard, you know, it's a standard shoot 'em up. It looks really nice compared to a lot of other ones that I've played.
It's got a good cartoony hand drawn style to it. It looks good.
Yeah. I didn't really have any complaints with it. My only fear is that it's going to get lost in the shuffle of all the other, you know, all the other shmups that are out there.
No, I mean, it stands out a little more on Xbox because there aren't as many shmups on Xbox as the other platforms, right. but still has a lot to compete Switch. With.
Yeah. And as I said, like in all reality, it's really just competing on art style on this one. So, honestly, though, I enjoyed it. I honestly don't have any complaints about it. It's like, it's just fairly straightforward. If you like shmups, you'll like this.
My concern on this one is the price. $18 isn't the cheapest for an indie shmup. And then when you compare it to something like Counterattack that the ID at Xbox channel was playing earlier today, that one has 4-player online play for $15.
Ooh.
So while it's cool seeing another 4-player shooter, I kind of wish it had online, because if someone else could do it, why can't you? I don't know. But I'm guessing technical limitation, online isn't easy to program, obviously. But as this one stands at the $17.99 price tag, what are your thoughts?
I'm not thrilled about $17.99. I would recommend waiting for a sale, but understand it's a solid game, but I'm not cool with spending $18 on it.
No, so pick up on a sale, try it, I guess.
For a sale, but yeah.
Cool. Next up is Buddy Simulator 1984, developed by Not a Sailor Studios, published by Feardemic, released April 6th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, and PS5 for $9.99. Thanks to next generation AI technology, Buddy Simulator 1984 simulates the experience of hanging out with the best buddy. Your buddy learns from you, constantly adapting to your interests and personality, but most importantly, your buddy can play games with you. Aki, what's going on in Buddy Simulator 1984?
Now, your buddy's kind of a sycophant, but... Okay, this game, you start off at a computer. Like, ye olden computer. Like, if you're young, you've never seen a computer like this. Like, this is, like, DOS levels old. And
Apple II, motherfucker.
Yeah. So, you start up by booting up the computer, the OS... And then you have to type in to run the game and stuff. Again, it's DOS, motherfuckers. This is old. I don't even remember ever doing this. It's so goddamn old.
It supports keyboard and mouse. Does that mean you have to actually type your shit in this game?
I didn't know it supported keyboard and mouse.
Yeah, it says console, keyboard, and mouse on the store page. That would make it
so much easier. Oh my god, I'm going to have to use my keyboard. But no,
do you want to replay this and do this one next week?
No, because it's not going to change much anything, sadly. If you play it with a controller like I did, it brings up a keyboard on the screen, and you just move it over, kind of like when you're putting in your screen name or your email and your password,
yeah,
and stuff on here with the controller. It's basically the same thing. And really, you just have to, for the most part, you just type in, like, if you want to do run, you click the R, and it'll pop up the word run, and you can just click a button to go to the end of it, because you're like, oh, yes, that's the right word. And then you can click, you know, for Buddy Simulator, it would be B, and if there's no other B word other than Buddy Simulator, it'll have that set to autofill, and then you can just click it over and be like, oh, autofilled for me, woohoo! When there is multiple words, then you have to spell out a bunch of it until it hits where, oh, it can't be this other word. Now it's autofilled to what you're going to need. And autofill. So it's not terrible, but if it was on the keyboard, had I realized that, it would have been so much faster. but the game starts up, you're doing this, and you're talking with this little AI. It does ask you questions, most of them are benign shit, like, what's my name? What's your name? If you had an animal, what kind of animal would it be? And what's its name? What's your favorite color? What's your favorite season? Benign shit that doesn't really matter. And then you just talk to it this way for a while. And then it creates this little game for you to play after you give it full permissions to control the entire computer. And then it starts upgrading everything whilst you're playing. It takes a while for each upgrade, but it eventually moves to like 2D and then 2.5D and so on and so forth, which is really interesting. And it just gives you this weird little adventure that you go on, and it constantly changing stuff, and problems are happening in the background because it doesn't know really what the fuck it's doing. So it's kind of funny. It's a really interesting concept. Sadly, I didn't finish this because I got like a third or so through the game and it broke on me. So I restarted it and I haven't gotten back there again because it requires me to go through all the text only stuff, which I don't find fun. I'm not a big proponent of type text games. So I haven't gotten back to that point yet, which is a shame. If it does it again, I'll contact the devs, but I'm hoping it was just a one-time thing. But yeah, you can do little quests for people. It changes what kind of game it is throughout the thing, so I can't even tell you what kind of game it is. It starts as a text-type game, and then it goes to 2D, where you basically go and pick things up and go find stuff and bring it back to people and things like that, and you can talk to individuals, and that's really it. And then it turns to 2.5D, and you can fight, which is fun. I want to just skip straight to the 2.5D part now. that's the kind of game I like the most. And you're off on your little quest for that. And I don't know what happens after that, because I did not finish that part, because that's when I broke on, sadly. But I fairly like it. Your first playthrough of this is probably going to take you 6 to 8 hours would be my guess. But after you've played through it, and you're going to have to play through it 4 different times, by the way, if you want all the achievements, so achievement hunters, fuck you. Because literally, you have to play through the entire thing. You cannot be like, oh, I'll just make a save here. No, you do not make saves in this game. It auto-saves when you quit.
Nice.
Yes. So you have to play through it literally 4 times. Have fun.
Yeah, it's 5-6 hours. It's not that bad.
Yeah, after you play through it the first time, it goes a lot faster, because you know generally what you're doing. Because there's the perfect ending, which is the longest, and then there's a normal ending, which is apparently what you're likely to get. And then there's a bad end and an alternate bad end, and the alternate bad end is the fastest one, which still sounds like it's going to take forever.
Well, the game is sitting at $9.99. What are your thoughts?
You're definitely getting your money's worth in pure hours of playing this game. And I think its comedy, I think, will work for a lot of people, because the little AI just tries so hard and is just such a fuck up, and it's so great. So yeah, I totally suggest this for people, especially for younger people who don't know what text type games are, just because I want to ruin their lives just that little bit.
Learn your history, you damn kids.
Yeah, those are some of the worst games known to man, and I want every child to have to play this, so go buy the game.
All right, well, we got one final game to talk about tonight, and it is Sports Ball Shenanigans time. George, take it away.
And now for Sport Ball Shenanigans with Dingleberry Jones, Jacob Garner, on the SML Podcast. We tried to get Bob Costas, and he was all like, no.
That's right, Sports Ball Shenanigans. We are talking Volley Pals, developed and published by Nyasu. Released April 6th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and Switch for $6.49. It's on Steam for $4.99. Chaotic cartoon-style arcade volleyball game with local multiplayer for up to 4 people. It's designed as a party game with each level featuring different themes and mechanics. Jacob, tell us about your time that you spent playing Volley Pals with your kids.
Fun fact, I didn't, because I was working when I got the code for review, and I, redeemed it, and then told my kids who were downstairs, like, oh, yeah, like, if you like, in Rayman, shoot.
Whatever.
It's the one with the soccer game in it. It's, there's a Rayman game that has a soccer game, like, in it, just as, like, a side thing for you to do. And my kids absolutely love it. So I was just like, hey, this Volley Pals thing looks kind of like that. I think you'll love it. Come to find out 40 minutes later, they've 1K'd it. and they're already like, all right, yeah, that was fun. We're done. I'm like, what? Like, what? So yeah, so Volley Pals is like an arcade-y volleyball game. And there's like 4 different players that you could choose from, a boy, a girl, like there's this big pile of goo, and I forget what the other guy is. But anyway, the big thing about Volley Pals is that these are not normal games of volleyball. You could have it set up to be a normal game of volleyball if you want, but there's like a ton of different courts that you can use, and like one of them is like set on the moon, so like gravity is not that big. There's another one where like it's set in a haunted house, and there's a ghost who messes around with the ball. There's another one where a ceiling fan can actually, change, how the air is moving. But also, if it hits the ceiling fan, then it goes flying. There's another one, to just give you ideas. There is a lot of variety with this. My kid's favorite one was the one with portals. That one was also my favorite, too. Just because it could really change how things were going real quick. Sorry.
You're not sorry. Yeah, I don't believe you at all.
Well, too bad. So anyway. So this definitely is a party game. There's no online multiplayer. It's 4-player local co-op. And it's just you go through the different volleyball courts, and it switches it up enough that it keeps going, it keeps you going for it. I would like to see some DLC for some other court ideas that they have in it, or perhaps if they want to set up a championship mode, some of the other indie sports titles that we've seen, what was that one that was combining basketball with bowling balls and footballs and stuff like that? Do you remember Joe?
Super Ultra Mega Touchdown or something.
Yeah, something like that. But something along those lines for this game, that would be kind of fun to have an actual campaign mode, quote unquote, for it. But that being said, it is very much a party game. I'm surprised that my kids lasted for the entirety of the game. Pretty much once they had played through each of the courts and replayed a couple of their favorites, they were kind of I'm done. But I know that they're going to return to it this weekend. I liked it. They liked it. It's a good family, not only a good party game, but it's also a good family game too, which I could really appreciate.
Nice. So it is sitting
all in all, it plays well. It just needs some more content.
Well, it's $6.49. What are your thoughts on that price tag?
For $6.49, that's an absolute buy. Absolutely. That is cheap enough that it makes it a passable party game. And you're not so worried about that content level. But as I said, if they want to release DLC later on, that would be a very welcome thing for this game.
Cool. All right, well, that is it for this episode. We made it through. Congrats, everyone.
Woot.
Woo!
I don't know what to play for music this episode. I was going to see if I had anything video game related that mentions peanut butter.
What does the fuck say?
No.
You should play the Megas, just because I requested.
Oh, my God.
How come my music requests always get ignored?
Because they're shit?
What the fuck? Fuck you. The Megas are great.
I don't know who that is, actually. Can you play some of the Megas? Because I have no idea who the fuck that actually is.
Fine, I'll play the Megas.
Yeah. Built from airplane parts, his propeller spins 70.